The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic, coming up on this week's show. Lads, we're back. Our month in the podcast wilderness is over. The year in pieces, how Newcastle United took the Premier League by storm. And back in black and white League and Cup games this week. Hello, chaps. How the devil are we?
I'm wonderful, other than I've just spilt beer down my front. It looks like I pissed myself.
It started already, hasn't it?
Well, I've got my hand is clutching a very attractive Tyneside blonde. Can you say that?
Can you say that these days?
No. Looking at my producer. No.
Producer Ollie says we
no. I mean, I should point out that is a beer. I mean, we are on a night out, It is a beer. It's a very nice beer from Mordew Brewery.
It is. We don't get to do this very often where we get to sit in the same environment and enjoy each other's company and look into each other's eyes as we do this. But we're also sitting in a window. I feel like I'm in a zoo. I feel like I'm a zoo, like a thing in a zoo. I think that people could be watching us walking up High Bridge today. It's weird.
Yeah, throwing shit at us.
Exactly. Oh, we should just throw which shit side back
of the,
at them.
Which side of the fence are we on?
I think we are the zoo side.
We are the zoo, so we'd be throwing shit.
These ridiculous chairs.
Yeah.
Chris, can we talk about what Chris is wearing?
Let's set the scene. Chris has turned up. We're going to start with the socks. They're an interesting Christmas bauble socks, is that right?
Yeah, festive beer socks, yeah. They're from Thornbridge Brewery.
Yeah, he's got some old man shoes on, which is nice. He's wearing a Christmas jumper, and on top of the Christmas jumper, he has a Joe Linton Hawaiian shirt, a Christmas hat, which then has a cracker hat on top of that. I'm not going to pull any punches here, Chris. You look fucking ridiculous, mate.
You said we were doing a Christmas pod. That was my understanding of what we were doing here. So therefore, I came dressed for the occasion. A Christmas Newcastle United themed pod. If anything, you are the two who look weird and out of place in this setting.
We've come dressed as shit pundits.
We've come dressed as middle-aged men, yeah. I've just signed my own resignation letter with my sexist joke, so I don't really care what I say anymore. That shirt of Chris's, the Gillinton shirt, was last seen at Rio's Steakhouse in Jesmond.
I heard about this.
So the low light of the World Cup for me, and also quite possibly the low light of my entire career, and trust me, there have been some lows, where Chris and I were dispatched to Rio, which was fantastic. It's the Steakhouse in Jesmond where Chiche met Bruno. Before the World Cup, and of course he was then selected.
Rudely did not invite Joe Linton.
Did not invite Joe Linton, but Joe Linton is a regular there, and so is Bruno. And they went. Bruno went there to celebrate with his family when he got called up, and we had the food, which was delicious. We had a couple of Big Joe cocktails, correct?
Joel's,
and you made me wear the other shirt, which was the Bruno shirt, and I've never felt lower as a human being whilst doing that. And then, of course, Bruno didn't play, so we looked like absolute twats. Well, we looked like twats and were twats.
But we were dispatched to this restaurant having been told the information out in Qatar is that Bruno is going to start this game. So then George and I had sat down, just ordered food, and literally just ordered our first Joel cocktails, and then the team came out and he wasn't in it.
He wasn't playing yet.
So George took a photo of me sipping the cocktail and sent it to boss and said, too late now. So
yeah, it was good expenses. Good expenses bill that night.
Lovely.
And then we went upstairs to the bar where they were showing the match on a television screen, and we were the only people in the bar, literally the only people, apart from the barman, who was very, very nice, and a Newcastle fan, listened to the pod. So there was absolutely no atmosphere to soak up. It was just me and Chris sitting there, wearing stupid shirts.
I was going to say, where was my invite? But then I saw the way the two of you were dressed and I thought, I'm probably glad I wasn't.
Well, it was supposed to be like a serious thing. And then Chris brought those shirts, which was a bad start. And it got worse. Food was lovely though.
Well, we'll crack on in just a moment, chaps. We've got some presents and some gifts that we're going to open as we go through. Apparently, I've been told by producer Ollie that I need to open mine first. So I'm going to do that right now, which is tricky with one hand, but not impossible. a Minecraft collector's tin. Thanks, Ollie. It's just what I wanted. Oh, me! All right. From when I'm recording in the boys' bedroom. Cheers. That's great. I'll wrap that up and give that to my child as a present on Christmas Day. Cheers, man. Thanks very much. That's lovely stuff.
Good recycling of presents even before Christmas.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Yeah, great stuff. Right,
that's
then.
That's a good start.
Shall we crack on?
Yes.
Come on then. Right, it's been 17 years since we last recorded an episode of this nonsense, and we need to get up to date on events. So, fellas, in 30 seconds or less. Please sum up your thoughts on the following. The World Cup, George.
We've done Bruno and Rio. Another highlight was watching Germany-Spain with Dan Byrne, big Dan Byrne at the Brilliant. Athletic office. That was great. That was really good. And then the rest
of
it...
You gave him a hug, didn't you?
I did give him a hug, yeah. I dropped my phone as I gave him a hug. It was a bit of a... Yeah, I let myself down. And his dad then emailed you and made reference to the hug, so I felt really embarrassed about that in retrospect. But never mind, that was good. And then really, yeah, I mean, World Cup, not bad, wrong time, wrong place, yep. But then that final, come on. I mean, that was just everything you want from a football match.
It was an astonishing game of football, wasn't it? What about our Swiss correspondent, Chris Wolf? How did you view the World Cup? You're notoriously cynical about international football, but even you must have got swept up a little bit.
I am. No, there's some really good games, and you know I'm not a massive follower of England, but I thought England were very unlucky against France in the quarterfinal. Yeah. I thought that they probably should have gone through. The final was wonderful. Mm. And also just getting throughout the tournament, George's twat or not a twat penalty verdict was also enjoyable.
Yes, absolutely. George, what did you think about those penalties? The Spanish penalties, I was sitting watching that thinking George Culkin is going to be going mental.
Well, I know that I was pleased they went out because they were such terrible penalties. They deserve to go out for that alone.
But then Harry Kane...
Well, he twatted
that you've second
got,
one, didn't
yeah,
he?
But you've got to twat on target. I mean, there's no point twatting off
but
target.
But when you twat, do you not, you surely lose some of the accuracy when you twat, and this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a point. I mean, yeah, you've got to hit the target with whatever penalty. I mean, I think that I didn't like the Messi penalty that he took in the shootout because that's so soft. Yeah, I mean, the keeper almost had time to, like, stop and... Move back and pick that
time
up.
To get to the ball, though, did he?
Well, I know. I like.
Sat him down.
I think if you twat a penalty and you miss, then you've done everything possible to score, except with Kane, who missed. You've got to hit the target.
But did you like Chris Wood's penalty of the weekend? That was good.
That was a very good penalty. Yeah,
it was nicely twatted, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was perfectly twatted.
Oh, and then England were pretty good, weren't they? Southgate's probably staying in the job, so it's one less problem for us to worry about. Eddie Howe looking like he's probably the next cab off the rank as far as England manager goes. But, you know, England were all right.
Yeah, I thought they were decent. I mean, apart from the game against America, USA, which was pretty terrible. No, I thought they did well. Bellingham coming through was obviously really good.
He's some player.
He is some player. I mean, a bit sad that Trippier... kind of went out of the team, although Kyle Walker did well and would have liked to have seen a bit more from Callum. But no, I thought they did well.
An assist, didn't he, Callum?
He did, yeah. No,
very unselfish, that.
It's just, I mean, the interesting thing, I mean, obviously England always used to go out in the quarterfinals and it used to then be followed by this, like, you know, national gnashing and wailing and teeth and, you know, it's not good enough and there's introspection and stuff like that. Yeah. The kind of nice thing about this is that it's been done without any of that sort of bullshit and bollocks and they've gone on with it and he's got another go and I'm pleased about that. The players like him, everyone likes him. So, yeah, I'm pleased with that.
Yeah. Well, Newcastle's players in the majority were used sparingly, weren't they, by the teams, Chris? Fabian Scher played a few games, had a stinker, didn't he? That game when apparently he wasn't feeling very well and he gave away a penalty. Let a goal go past him and got booked all in the space of about 10 minutes. Wasn't a great showing from him in that game.
Newcastle players were just desperate to return to Tyneside. They wanted to be back there.
Proper serious football.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't want to leave in the first place, Bruno aside maybe. The rest of them they wanted to be here, part of Project Shithousery.
Absolutely. All the way to Qatar for that tin pot nonsense.
Tell you what, Fred must be a really good footballer to keep Bruno out of the team, mustn't he?
I know. That's incredible.
A joke because clearly he's not a very good footballer.
No, but look. Bruno visibly made Brazil better when he played.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was very strange.
He missed a sitter, though, didn't he? So.
He did. I mean, he came on and that. He was quite erratic, and that was actually
erotic.
The game where we...
Erotic?
It was quite erotic.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Nipples visibly erect when he came on.
I'm not talking
about
Fabian Scher. I mean, he's...
also erotic, yeah. I'd also
but that was that was actually the game. Actually, when we were watching the Bruno game when he didn't start at Rio... it kept on showing highlights of the other game, which is the one Cher was playing in, where there was like a goal every few minutes, whereas the game we watched was absolutely crap for 90 minutes until it was goal.
And so we'd been dispatched to this steakhouse to watch Bruno, and then like the fear was we were going to get a call from one of the bosses saying, does anyone in the big market do fondue? And you can go and watch Switzerland instead.
Oh, man.
What is, you know, watching football while eating, anyway.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Garan Kuyol as well, Chris. He nearly scored, nearly equalised against the world champions as they are now. An incredible moment for him, but amazing that he got to go to the World Cup in the first place. And it should give him an awful lot of experience, and it'll, you know, put him on a good standing for when he comes back to Newcastle.
Well, comes to Newcastle in the first place. He came on actually against the former world champions in the first game, France, and was sort of anonymous, really, and then didn't feature until that game when he did come on. He was very, very unlucky, actually, with the chat. I thought he'd done everything right, really. There wasn't much he could have. It was a very good save that denied him in that match. And he's gone back to Central Coast Mariners because his transfer isn't official until January the 1st. He's played, made his first league start the weekend, got an assist.
So the
plan for him is still to go out on loan in January, but good to see him get that sort of experience. And he seems really excited about coming across.
I was, because I'm old, I'm like one of the sort of senior citizen writers of The Athletic. I was asked to give kind of all my predictions for the tournament, and that's problematic because I don't know anything about football beyond Newcastle, and I don't know anything about Newcastle either. So I needed some help with this. So I asked Chris, who's my pick for potential young player of the tournament? And Chris said, I'll just say him. So I said him, and that made me look like a fool, didn't it, Chris?
What were your other predictions? Didn't you say England were going to win it?
I said England were going to win it, but then I caveated that by saying England wouldn't win it.
You've covered all the bases there, haven't you,
basically? And I said there'd be a load of shocks, which I was correct about.
You asked the man who knows nothing about international football who was going to be this.
Well, he knows even less than me, yeah.
Terrible stuff. The rest of the squad, they had another little trip to Saudi Arabia as well, including a comfortable win against Al Hilal. It was an interesting one, that. I watched that game on NUFC TV with a friend of the podcast, Mark Allenson, doing the commentary. It was an interesting afternoon. Kept calling Jason Tindall Mad Dog. It was a good game, though, and Joe Linton got on the score sheet. Miguel Almiron got a couple as well. And, an easy little run out, wasn't it?
Well, so it was Al Hilal's reserves, but yeah.
Was it the reserves?
Because most of their squad had been at the World Cup with Saudi Arabia, so it was actually the reserves, but yeah.
See, you know little about international football. I know even less about Saudi Arabian football, so there we go.
So I had a chat with Mark Allison, who did the commentary, a.k.a. Run Geordie Run, you'll know him from Twitter. And of course, he was asked with a couple of hours notice on that Saudi trip to do the commentary, which is like this just great.
That's great,
you know, great story. And he said, he said he's still on kind of cloud nine, and he met everybody afterwards and was able to do a little video with Mad Dog, and he left him a message. But anyway, I had a nice chat with him. So one other little connection, right, is that he has a new puppy.
He does.
And his puppy is a cousin of your puppy.
That's correct.
So your puppy named George after me. And he says that he wanted to name his puppy Chris.
Is that right?
Yeah, but well, Donna, his wife, ruled that out.
Something. Well, his puppy's actually called Orla, which is the Irish name, which means golden princess.
Right.
And if we had got a girl puppy instead of a boy puppy, that's what we were going to call her.
That's spooky.
There you go. Coincidental.
But instead it was the big male figure in your life.
So it was either whatever princess or Chris.
Yeah, Chris. Chris is quite a good name. Chris is quite. I used to have a cat called Barry. I thought that was a good name for a cat.
Strong name for a dog, isn't it? Chris.
Chris. Yeah, Chris. I also used to have a cat called Fanny, and I thought that was very funny. Until she went missing, and then I had to stand on my doorstep,
shouting,
"Fanny, come here, Fanny." I've definitely been sacked if I haven't. Should I just resign? I don't know. Am I getting sacked? I'm getting sacked.
Yeah. Let's move on.
You'd asked about Saudi Arabia, and yes, Newcastle did go to Saudi Arabia. Last time in January, they went to Jeddah. This time, they went to Riyadh.
Yep.
And there was more than 100 representatives of Newcastle United went across because they took across like a commercial team and loads of others, and basically they signed off on loads of deals, sponsorships for various different things with gaming companies and... Saudia for sponsored the trip going across there, the air trip. And then also, as well as the commercial events, they met some fans out there, Eddie Howe and Darren Eales and some of the others, and then also they had some quite brutal, I think, training sessions to try and get them ready, because it's basically, as Howe kept referring to it, as a mini pre-season, which sort of annoys me when people refer to it as that, because it's like, well, it's actually in the middle of a season, so it's not a pre-season. But but they had actually less time.
Strange thing to get annoyed about.
It is, really, isn't it? Yeah. Not like you're a pedant or anything, Chris.
less time in that, less time than you would in pre-season, so it was all sort of trying to push everything together and get it through quite quickly. And I think, because the players basically had a fortnight off, so had lost a little bit of the rhythm and fitness, so to get them back to where they were.
I love the idea that one of them might have came back really fat. That would have been amazing.
Well, actually, I know that during the summer that a couple of players had come back a little bit over. Yeah, a little bit over as to where they were expected to be. But I don't know whether that happened on this occasion.
I remember going around the training ground when Alan Pardew was manager, when I was part of the fans forum. We got a little tour on the training ground, and they had the list on the wall of all the players' body fat percentages when they came back off the summer. And Adam Benofa was just like way beyond everybody on the list. It was like 34% body fat or something. It was essentially kebabs at that point. He was just, couldn't believe it. But, you know, it wasn't a surprise, put it that way.
Whereas now I imagine if you add all of them together, it would probably have less body fat than me. So.
Very true, yeah. I wish I was that fat. and then Newcastle beat Rayo Vallecano at St James's Park on Saturday, and it was nice to see Florian Lejeune turn out at St James Park. He got a lovely response when he came on the pitch.
On the bench at St James'
as well, isn't it?
On the bench at St James's Park, not for the first time in his career.
Yeah. I'm amazed to see him fit, to be honest. I was going to say that Rayo Vallecano kit's beautiful, isn't it? Lovely.
It was lovely.
I love that kit. Yeah. It's really nice.
Yeah, that's not what you said before the game. You said, I don't like that.
Did I? I can't even remember what colour it was. I was just agreeing with Taylor.
It was red with the sort of dash. The sort of,
oh, no, I
love a
like,
sash.
No, I know, I didn't
a
like
good
that.
Sash kit. You know, like
no,
sash
I didn't like that, no.
No?
So, yeah, if I can just retract what I said.
I'm going to do that again then, right? We'll do that
I thought it was blue and white. I was thinking, was it blue? I can't remember.
I must say as well, George, that Rayo Vallecano kit's lovely, isn't it?
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous, yeah. Yeah, I loved it. Blue and white stripes.
But, just speaking of the friendly, because we are recording this podcast on the Monday, so this will sort of be old news by the time it comes out, but I just want to... The last couple of days have been strange in the sense that Eddie Howe, who is usually quite coy on team news anyway, has basically managed to create a situation where there was doubts over Callum Wilson's fitness, to which he then came out this morning and said, I don't know where all this stuff about Callum Wilson's fitness came out of, but basically he was asked after the game on Saturday, because in the Rayo Vallecano game, he played a very strong first 11, but the bench was entirely made up of kids. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for that was Newcastle had a behind-closed-door game on the Friday, so some of the players, in terms of their fitness loads and things like that, but Howe was asked after the game about various different players' fitness. He was asked about Alexander Isak, who he said, yeah, well, we're hopeful for Tuesday, but we haven't got a return date on him and he hasn't training yet. So it's like, well, there's no chance.
So he's not coming on Tuesday.
Wilson, he basically said, I don't want to give anything away on that. Mm. So obviously over the next couple of days, there's a lot of, well, what's happening with Callum Wilson? Wouldn't speak about Dan Byrne, who didn't feature, Joe Linton, Miguel Almiron. So then at his press conference this morning, he was asked about them. He completely shut me down when I asked him directly.
Yeah, too, Chris. We've already established that he can't stand
I asked him about Joe Linton, Dan Byrne, and Miguel Almiron, and he just replied with, he stopped for a second, and then he just said, you'll find out when the team sheet comes out. But he was asked about Wilson, to which he said, yeah, I don't know where all this stuff's come about. I've never said there's a problem with Wilson. He's fine. And it's like, well, why didn't you just say that on Saturday? So there's been a weird sort of almost injury crisis that is an injury crisis.
I think he intimated, didn't he, that he said that a couple of players he'd have to be cautious with.
Yeah.
And there would be one or two. And I think people sort of took that as being Callum Wilson because he'd had a little bit of an injury problem when he was away at the World Cup. But it just sounds like you've been pissing him off in the press conferences.
No, I don't know. I think it's a bit different. I think it's that sort of control freakery that he has. I mean that I mean that in a nice way, and that he wants to kind of keep information in house. I mean, so for a long time it's been a very, very leaky football club. We know that, and as journalists, we want it to be leaky because that's how you kind of get find stories. As a fan, I'm quite happy for stuff to be kept in house and for people to be kept guessing about fitness and things like that, because obviously it keeps the opposition guessing as well. So it's that kind of quite interesting thing where, yes, you want to know stuff and you want information. And of course, at press conferences, you want your questions to be answered and get great quotes because that's what you want. But Eddie is just not the kind of manager to do that. And part of me respects that. And it sort of, it reminds me a little bit of the of the kind of Chris Hughton days. I mean, you know, I adore Chris Hughton. I still do. I did at the time. You know, just a brilliant human being. His press conferences were awful because he just wouldn't say anything. He never said anything.
Yeah. But it was guarded, wasn't he?
But it was just what Newcastle needed at the time. They needed an end to all that sort of up and down nonsense. And I think there's a bit of that with Howe. He could say stuff, and occasionally he does, but you know, in terms of team news, he wants to keep that to himself.
And I don't disagree with you. And I just think you almost see the issue with him. It's not that he didn't. His own words on Saturday created this one story by basically saying about Wilson, I don't want to give anything away. If he just said, yeah, he's back, we're checking on everyone's in terms of fitness levels or whatever, where they are, because he's just come back, then it wouldn't have been a story, but it would almost be too.
He created his own conspiracy almost, yeah.
Sorry, I was busy adjusting my hat there while you were talking, Chris. I didn't realise you'd finished. Sorry. are we all back up to speed then in that case? Is everyone happy?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, let's move on. We'll have a quick break and we'll be back in a tick. But don't forget, you can go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod right now, where you can pick up a subscription to The Athletic and pay less than £2 a month for 12 months. What a great Christmas present that would be for somebody. Back in a moment.
Hi there, Steve Stone here. Just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year at Pod on the Tyne. And my wish list for the new year for Newcastle United? Well, hopefully more of the same, but if I'm really going to be greedy, I'm looking for Champions League qualification. Happy New Year, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right then, it's our Christmas show, so we're going to be looking back over the year just gone.
Yes, I just wanted to say, you said before that break that it's two quid a month to subscribe?
Less than two pounds.
Puns?
Are you all right?
No, I think I've had a stroke. So less than £2 a month to subscribe. And I'd just like to say, you know, this sounds like very earnest. It's, you know, Christmas time, not like making a plea for money, but it's that little investment that allows Chris and I to get dressed up in really stupid shirts and eat a shitload of meat and drink cocktails. You're paying directly for that. So please carry on. Money well spent.
That's worth £2 of anybody's money.
Thank you. Yes, that's what I think.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's a Christmas show. We're looking back over the year just gone. And let's be honest, it's been a bit of a spectacular year on the football pitch, hasn't it, George? What would your highlights be for the year?
Oh, blimey.
Your footballing highlights.
Well, I mean, it's at times like this that I wish I'd thought about that in advance because as you know, I can't remember anything.
Yeah. Chris?
I mean, it's puzzling almost when you look back at the turn of the year and you think that at that stage, Newcastle had still only won one game in terms of the entire part of that, well, the previous season that we were in. And at that stage, it was thinking there could genuinely be the quote-unquote richest club in the world in the Championship next season. And then they're ending it third in the Premier League and just basically with the fifth best form in the entire Premier League throughout the year.
It's been an astonishing year overall, hasn't it? I mean, it's been incredible. Yeah, as Chris says, that Leeds game at the start of the year, proper jeopardy, you know, proper jeopardy on that game. I think it was like that had to happen. But then, you know, those moments at the end of last season, Arsenal, that stands out for obvious reasons. Man City stands out. Tottenham stands out this season. But just that feeling of going back to St. James's and wanting to be there, longing to be there all the way through this World Cup. I've had that thought that, you know, that shouldn't be happening. We should be watching Newcastle now. It's winter. It's like I want to be outside with other people watching football live.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's like, oh God, it's just so good. So no, in all seriousness, those are the highlights. It's just been an astonishing year.
It has. I mean, as far as football and highlights go for me, I've got two words for you, Chris Woff. Miguel Almirón. What a year that man's
Miguel
had.
George, isn't
it? Miguel.
Miguel. Miggy.
Well, an absolutely astonishing 4 months. But yeah.
Chris.
But no, but I am being...
Christmas Grinch.
The reason we had this conversation also through this season is because it came to pre-season and I still doubted him from that. So basically, since July, he's been the best player in the Premier League, just about.
It was nice, actually, during the World Cup, wasn't it? Jack Grealish did interviews with everybody, and he talked about that, and he actually came out of it very, very well. He did that, had that beautiful goal celebration as well, which was like very nice. But no, he was lovely about Miggy. I thought
it was Matt Target, wasn't it, who we spoke to about?
That's right.
Said,
yeah, that's right.
Hope he's all right.
Please tell him. Please tell him
not to come and looking for me.
Yeah,
I hope he's okay. And Matt Target replied with, "He's a lovely lad.
Yeah,
he doesn't
worry.
Speak much English."
Well, yeah, I'm glad from that as well, because that means it isn't just journalisty pies in the press when he comes through and says that he can't speak English. If he can't actually speak to his teammates as well, that's reassuring. But
fair
no, he's be the. I mean, that is what we hope to see over the course of the next few weeks, is that he picks up where he left off, and that's what I think. There was a bit of concern he didn't play on Saturday. I think he will play tomorrow night, and this is obviously just coming out after that, because in Saudi Arabia he continued to form. His two finishes were brilliant. He came
beautiful.
On. He's excellent, and that's the confidence that he has. The clarity of what he's being asked to do, he has been another revelation under Eddie Howe. There has been Howe-fication, as we spoke about Solskjaer. He's not doubted it, and thankfully he has massively proven me wrong. And I just hope he continues that from this stage on, because he was deservedly Premier League player.
But then if we're looking at those players, you know, this is not new stuff that we're saying. But Trippier, of course, has been absolutely immense. Bruno has just been out of this world. One of the best footballers we've seen at Newcastle for a long time. And then, of course, you're talking Jolinton, the Jolinaissance. Can't say that either. Jolinaissance. Nick Pope. We're talking about Sean Longstaff this season. Players all over the pitch. You've just been fantastic. It's just been great.
Was it this year that Jolinton kicked the ball off his own face as well, though? Was that?
Was that last year?
Oh, it was right on the cusp. I can't remember.
Anyway, we'll just remember that moment.
We can just remember that anyway, because that was great.
But it's been a great year for the squad in general, hasn't it? A lot of those players who maybe under other managers in the past might not have looked like they were going to have any kind of long-term career. I'm thinking of Fabian Scher come in, and he's got a great partnership at the back now with Sven Botman, and you wouldn't start anybody else over them two, would you?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, they've found a way to keep Dan Burn in the team, who hadn't done anything wrong. Dan Burn's been brilliant. I mean, again, you just look at every position, really, and there's no weaknesses. You look at people like Jacob Murphy, who'd been discarded, who's come in, you know, he's made himself, you know, a really important player. And all those players that have come into the team, come into the squad, have contributed. What we said at the start of the season, the squad may be too weak for Newcastle to prosper if they get any injuries, but they've had injuries and they've prospered. It's been brilliant.
Ollie, our producer, just showed me that it was this year that Jolinton kicked the ball off his own face in February.
Good. Earning his money there, Ollie. Well done. Excellent stuff. So progress has been made off the pitch as well, hasn't it, with Darren Eales and Dan Ashworth. They seem to be ready to take Newcastle to the next level. There's lots of commercial stuff going on. There's lots of stuff going on behind the scenes, sponsorship, etc., etc., etc. What's the next step for Newcastle after this?
Well, it's more of that. I mean, it's about, everything is about bringing in money so that they can spend more money. So that's really, really, really important. I mean, I'm told that they made money from the trip to Saudi, so that's good.
Excellent.
We know about little bits and bobs of a sponsorship they took to kind of get there and then had over there, so that's good. Front of shirt, you know, that stuff is still going on. That's really important. I mean, it's quite an interesting conversation that now, because if you think about how Newcastle looked a couple of months ago, flying, doing really well, but you wonder how much they could get for front of shirt as a Champions League club than they might do if they're not. I mean, so that does that change negotiations on that? Anyway, I know that they're talking to people about that. I mean, it's all about that. It's all about growing. we know that, you know, they can't just keep spending money on players and not bring anything in, which is how it's been really over the first kind of 18 months or so. So it's about those next steps.
And talking about January and the next steps as far as the squad's concerned, deals won't be easy to do in January, will they, Chris? But you never know. Do Newcastle have a plan going forward? Are they going to try and push as much as they can to take that step to get to the Champions League to make sure that it happens? Or they kind of have the plans changed, or are they sticking with what they had in the first place?
Well, I've written a piece which will go up on Boxing Day, sort of looking ahead to the January window, but I have already written that basically the pursuit of Champions League football this season is not really going to change Newcastle's plans, or at least that is the information coming out at the moment. And before I go into anything else, I'm going to caveat everything I say by this has been the messages going into the previous two windows, and then Yasser Al-Rumayyan joins in the conversation and suddenly Newcastle have loosened the purse strings. But I do think this one will be different in the sense that the squad is a lot deeper than it was. Howe is very happy with it. He would like to bring in players, and I think Ashworth's receptive to doing that as well. Darren Eales has come in, and obviously he's looking at the sort of FFP scenario and where Newcastle are in that sense, and I think that really the idea is that the majority of spending going forward will be during summer windows, when it's more conducive to doing business, to certainly making significant surgery to the squad. But I do think there could be maybe one or two out, possibly one in, maybe two, if pushing it right, a young right back to provide backup for Kieran Trippier. Obviously, Trippier started every game this season, but missed a lot of the second half of last season due to injury, and Mail Crafts out for the campaign.
Yeah.
Javier Manquillo doesn't really seem to fancy him, Eddie Howe. So I think a young right back's potentially one. We know that longer term we would like a number six, probably not one for January because I think it'll be a bit expensive, but that could be a position also, although it's not the right sided forward they were necessarily looking for last summer, specifically because of Miguel Almiron's form, they may look to bring in a forward as well. And so I think that someone like Ryan Fraser may go out, Jamal Lewis may go out on loan, but it's not going to be, I wouldn't have thought, four players in, five players in, and then quite a few go out the door, because I think that they're waiting until next summer to do the majority of the surgery.
Yeah, they had to act in January. I mean, they had to do remedial, you know, surgery then, and they've, you know, went along kind of similar lines in the summer in terms of quality. I had a conversation with somebody at the top of the club today, and it was like, you know, having a laugh about the World Cup. See anybody you fancied? You know, oh yeah, yeah, ha ha, yeah, all of them, yeah, love them, fancy loads of the players, can't afford them though. And so again, that is the sort of narrative. Chris is right. That's been said before. I think it's been said genuinely. I don't think that's been said to try and put people off the scent. I think there is a very, you know, there's a very kind of consistent message that they do have to be careful about FFP and all that. They've found a way of making it work, but just to repeat, you know, they haven't yet started bringing in the big money in terms of commercial deals. And until they do that, then they are going to be hamstrung a bit. You know, the great thing about the club at the minute is that we know that, you know, in 6 months, in a year, the squad will be better, the team will be better. One thing that's also been talked about a lot internally is that they just haven't seen Isak yet. I mean, so we've seen those couple of games.
This is what I was going to come
on
next.
It is a cliche, but, you know, they are talking about that, saying that, you know, Wilson has had until he went away to the World Cup, you know, he has been fit, he's been playing well, he's been available. The idea of Isak coming into that with the front, you know, when you've got St. Maximin, who's not featured too much, when you've got Almiron, who's been playing brilliantly, that does change the dynamic. That's very interesting. It's something Chris has written about in the last week or so as well. So they're very excited about him and seeing him properly, because they just haven't yet.
Where does Alexander Isak fit into this now, Chris? Because there's been a lot of chat about that recently. And does he play second fiddle to Callum Wilson? Is he going to come in as a wide forward and maybe play it? I mean, because he doesn't keep Miguel Almiron out of the team at the minute, does he? Maybe he keeps Alan St. Maximin out of the team, but it's not really his position playing on the left-hand side, is it?
No, I mean, I have, as George said, I've written about this, and so you can read it a bit more in depth. But the interesting thing about Isak is that he hasn't actually trained with Callum Wilson yet. The two of them have not even been on the training pitch at the same time, because Wilson was injured when he arrived.
Yeah.
And then, in full training anyway, and then Isak himself has been injured. So it's something which they thought that maybe the two of them could play together, but it remains theoretical because they haven't actually trained together in that sense. And because of Miguel Almiron's form, he is a shoo-in to play on the right wing now. So
it's an awful lot of money for a second fiddle, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I think if you look at it, I mean, they want depth, and also for someone like Isak, he got thrown in immediately when he came in and did very, very well, certainly way at Liverpool. But coming back from this injury, which he's had a recurrence from, rather than have to be forced into the team, if Callum Wilson's fit and available, he starts through the middle. And then you've mentioned Sam Maximan. In theory, Sam Maximan, I do think, will come back in the team. And again, that changes the dynamic slightly because you've had Murphy there, or you've had Joe Linton there, or you've had Fraser there. When Joe Linton plays there, it's almost like interchanging with Joe Willock.
Yeah.
Sam Maximan, I think, will be key in games like, for example, the Bournemouth and Palace games earlier in the season when he wasn't there and Newcastle couldn't break them down.
Yes.
Teams with a low block, he'll be key. But you also do lose something in terms of what he does off the ball. And I know a lot of people made comments about how hard he was working off the ball on Saturday. I'll be interested to see how long that continues for. But that then probably means Joe Linton plays left side of midfield, so he changed the dynamic of the team. So I think that to begin with, they won't rush Isak into the team. I think it probably will be him or Wilson from the start of games, probably Wilson most of the time to begin with. Then Isak may come on and the two of them may play together. Mm. And then you can see a few combinations going forward. But there isn't the need to get him in the team as quickly, and I think that's key as well. Whereas when he first came in, maybe there was.
Just a nice thing that Alan Shearer wrote about Mbappe and Messi straight after the World Cup final. And one of the things he mentioned sort of towards the end of that was about how they, you know, it doesn't quite work, the two of them playing together at PSG, because you've got Mbappe, who doesn't want to run back, and Messi, who can't anymore.
and within
their own teams, that doesn't, it's, you know, within the teams of France and Argentina, that doesn't matter too much, and they're kind of all built around the pair of them. But put them together and it causes problems. I mean, it is fascinating that with Newcastle and St. Maximin, because one of the things they've been so good at is that aggression, as you say, Chris, off the ball and the work rate and the intensity and the dark arts, if you want to put it like that. But, you know, that they've all been properly at it and they've caused teams problems, as you say, off the ball. St. Maximin doesn't do that. So can he do that, or do they have to change the way they play?
Absolutely. Right then, before we move on, the women's team as well have been doing pretty well. They go into 2023 1 point behind the league leaders, Durham Sestria. 1 point behind Durham Sestria. I mean, impressive stuff from the women.
Basically, since I've stopped going to watch them live, that's happened.
That,
I've missed the last few games. Yeah, didn't see the cup. They lost to Wolves in the cup, didn't they? From the division above, so that was a bit of a pity, but I think they did pretty well. And you have to remember, it's been a summer of transition for them as well. They brought in lots of players, getting used to it. It's a brutal, brutal league. It was great to see Amanda Staveley there, sort of in the dressing room, I think it was before the St. James's game, wasn't it? And, saying that there's been this sort of pressure on them to get in the Champions League. I mean, that was from her. She talked about this race with the men's team to get into the Champions League. But she's also saying it's not all about this season, it's about growth. But yeah, as quickly as possible, it would be great to happen, and it's good to see them doing well.
Can we just mention those two goals that they scored at St. James's Park as well, the women's team? Absolutely astonishing. One of them was about 45 yards out.
Yeah, they were absolutely brilliant, and that was another wonderful occasion for the women's team. Hopefully they're going to play there again before the end of the season, and you can see again that the fervour for people to get there and families to be able to come into St. James. We keep talking about how difficult it is to get a ticket for the match. You had the friendly at the weekend, 35,000 nearly there for the men's team. And then they broke their own record for that match. So that was brilliant as well.
Wonderful stuff. Right then, just before we move on, chaps, let's have some podcast highlights and lowlights from you. A highlight from the podcast, Chris, George.
I can't remember anything.
You can't remember anything.
Well, we've just talked about that.
I still can't decide whether it was a highlight or a low light.
Any guests we had?
But Alan Shearer did absolutely have my life.
Alan Shearer rinsing you.
Oh yeah, that
always was a highlight for me.
Good or bad.
But then I appeared in a rival podcast live at the stand that was to do with the 1892 pledge scheme when $200,000 was handed over to local charities. It was great. But I was on the stage with Shearer and Harper, and they still had that sort of dressing room banter thing going on together.
Banter, lads.
I was just torn to shreds. I was like a kitten in a lion's den. It was horrible. So I can't really sort of take the piss out of Chris for that, because I'm still mentally scarred from that episode.
I mean, in terms of guests, I think my favorite, I think I mean, I wasn't even on the podcast that week, but I thought Paul Ferris was an excellent guest. I thought he was very, very
Paul
good.
Was great, wasn't he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was great. Yeah, I remember that now.
One of my favourite things was Chris having to eat humble pie every week for about 6 weeks in a row when Miguel Almiron kept scoring goals.
Yeah, but
goals.
He didn't, though, did he? That's the thing. He didn't. He was, it's good. Yeah, he's got a goal, but it was a fluke. Yeah, it was a fluke.
He had a sniff
of
the humble pie, didn't he? But he didn't go all in and eat it.
He nibbled on the humble pie. Yeah, he nibbled.
I was away at Craven Cottage. I was genuinely in disbelief when he scored that volley. I refused to believe that it was, but haven't seen subsequently, he does mean it. But at the time, I refused to believe, I will admit.
That was brilliant. Chris, do us a favour. Just open your Christmas present there before we...
I have a feeling I know what this is now. so this is from Ollie, our producer.
It's not Miguel Almiron, is it? No, but maybe it is.
No, big, it is, in fact... Roasted vegetable lasagna.
Oh, right. That was a low light, wasn't it? Let's be honest. Chris sitting on his bed in his pants.
Oh,
eating
yeah.
Vegetable
God,
lasagna.
I forgot about that because he'd burnt his own cock with.
No, that's a different story that we haven't talked about on the podcast, yes.
We haven't talked about that before. Come on, but we have to now.
What?
Chris burnt
oh, maybe this
cock.
Was after
that,
the podcast.
That was during the World Cup.
All right, sorry, tell everyone. Oh, I've ruined this. No, I haven't ruined it because I've made you remember it and you've gone bright red. So that's perfect. So come on then. Tell that story. You tell the story, Chris. Come on.
Chris Bernie's on call. Oh, no. So, no, I was making a cup of tea. I'd poured the tea into the mug in front of me. Then something fell out of the cupboard above, knocked the scalding tea down my frontage. And yes, I had to whip my trousers. Well, no, it was actually shorts and shorts because I was about to go for a run. And I had to whip my shorts off, but I did get burns around a sensitive area. Not actually.
He then told me. He told me about it as well. It's like, Chris, you. It's the haplessness. Gotta be careful what I said because also during the World Cup, I went for a pint with Chris and his dad, and he's like, his dad, yeah, I listen to the podcast every week, and it was I'm sorry about everything I've ever said about your son, but then you surely realise he's an idiot, so
he might be an idiot, but he's my idiot.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was a bit of that. So yeah, sorry, that was a different time that you burnt your cock. What did you do with the lasagna?
No, I was playing football as I do, and we'd recorded later on, and it was a boiling hot day, and I was very, very warm. So I refused to come on camera because I wasn't wearing a top.
Oh, yes.
It was very, very
warm.
He
was just sitting in his pants eating lasagna.
But I was also eating my dinner because I just got in, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. That does ring a bell, yeah.
What an absolute tableau of despair that is.
Yeah.
In his pants.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, George. Yeah, that was great.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Maybe that's the highlight.
Oh, I don't think there's a better place to break and move on. Back in a moment. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's amazing.
Happy Christmas, lads. Top three for Christmas as well, so I think it's going to be a good one. And I've asked Santa to keep us in the top four until the end of the season. I'm pretty sure I'm on the nice list as well, so hopefully I'm going to get my wish. But I hope you all have a wonderful Christmas and keep up the brilliant work in the new year. Toon toon, Black and White Army, ho 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 ho!
So Eddie Howe, Shithouse and Mags will be back in action on Tuesday night facing Bournemouth in the League Cup. Chris, the Eddie Howe derby, they should win, shouldn't they?
Taylor, we're recording this before the match and it's coming out after the match.
Right.
We've already had to re-record this section once. Why are you asking them about something that's already happened when people are listening to it?
Because it's in the running order and as you know, I'm like Ron Burgundy, I just read what's in front of me.
Surely this is pointless for all the lovely listeners.
I don't know. I don't think it's pointless.
Should we just say...
It's quite a big game. It's quite important.
Yeah, okay, all right. Okay.
Let's mention it.
Come to me first.
Come to me first. George.
Yes.
The Eddie Howe derby. Newcastle against Bournemouth.
Yes, I would like to say that was an absolutely
brilliant victory
from Newcastle United on Tuesday night in the League Cup. And I
can't wait for the draw to see
who they play next. Is that good?
That'll do. Chris, you're going to be sensible.
It is a very big game because Newcastle have the chance to get into the...
Was a very big game and had the chance.
Yes, touche. But they can get into to the last eight. One of Man City and Liverpool are going to be out by that stage as well. Newcastle could well be out as well, but we believe they're going to get through.
I feel like we're going to need a DeLorean to make this make sense, because at the minute it doesn't.
But this is a huge opportunity. This really is a huge opportunity for them to try and go deep into this competition. The finals in February, it won't take that long before that comes around. And also, but also, if you remove the fact that it is that they have the chance to go on and win a trophy, Howe was asked this morning at his press conference on Monday morning, and he was basically asked, is it good to have this game before the Premier League match, because you want to be back and be ready? And he said, well, yes, in one sense it is, but also, our focus is not on Leicester, our focus is on Bournemouth. Yeah. We want to be physically ready for this game. We want to be prepped for this. And he is approaching this as a very important match. He was funny because he always gets a bit defensive about his previous cup record when he was at Bournemouth, because he didn't go that deep in any of the competitions, and that because he was a team who really couldn't compete in that sense. But he refused to say that he was prioritising the cup this year more than in previous years. But he's able to, because he has the squad to be able to do it. He has the ambition from Newcastle United to go for that. And so I do think we will see it will have been a strong team on Tuesday, and the focus is to win that game. It's not just another warm-up, essentially, for the Leicester game. This is a very important game in its own right.
I'd just like to apologise to everybody who's had to listen to that, having already known what the score was in the Bournemouth game. I mean, that was just the worst bit of broadcasting we've ever done.
And there has been bad broadcasting.
Oh, no, there's been some terrible stuff. I mean, that was just a most colossal waste of time, and I'm quite angry about that.
Okay.
What I would say is that something that Eddie Howe says all the time or regularly is that he wants to win something here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is a cliche, obviously. I mean, it's the kind of thing that everyone says. But
Steve Bruce said that.
I know, but now the club does have the means to be able to do that. And, you know, Eddie Howe says that, and he says it sort of seriously. I mean it. That's what I want to do. I want to win something here. That's quite a sea change that the manager says it, and the club can deliver it. And, you know, we hope and pray will in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope that we're not already out of that cup in that case. Then we head to Leicester on Boxing Day.
Everyone wants to be on Boxing Day.
Are you going?
Yeah.
Yeah? You got out that one, George?
yes, I'm in... I'm away. I'm going back to America to see my family. But I'm hoping to be watching that match with a new former Newcastle United player. So,
are you going to drop a name or
not yet? In case it doesn't happen.
Oh, okay. All right. No worries. I'll tell you what. Why don't you open your present while we're here?
Oh, okay.
Because Ollie's pointing at it.
So again, this is from Ollie, our producer. I haven't brought any presents at all. Not prepared to acknowledge Christmas yet.
I'm doing mine at the end.
England South Coast. it's an eyewitness guide to England's South Coast. And the reason why that is funny, and yet I'm also not laughing in the slightest, is that, as regular listeners will know, Chris is physically incapable of travelling more than 200 miles away from Newcastle upon Tyne because of the lack of Savoloid dips. So yes. I have to do that. So this will be very nice. Thank you, Ollie. On my next trip to Brighton, Bournemouth, Southampton. Where else is there? Anywhere
Portsmouth.
Else?
Portsmouth.
Yeah, Devon.
Dorset. Inspire, plan, Torquay. Discover, Torquay experience. In the cup. Thank you. Stonehenge. Look at this. Guide to experience more. Kent and Sussex. Kent, is that how you spell it? Beautiful. Thank you.
There beautiful.
That's perfect. Stop.
But yes, I will be going to Leicester on Boxing
Day. Look forward to that.
I am looking forward to it. Newcastle have got a mixed record there. Either win heavily or lose heavily is how it's tended to go over the course of the last few years.
You sent me there last season, didn't you? I went there it was post takeover, but they lost heavily.
Oh, yes, you did. Yes, they lost 4-0. Yes.
They lost 4-0, yeah.
Early in Eddie Howe's reign. But anyway, it's an interesting one because just to see how they do pick up the form again. I mean, Leicester were in terrible form for most of the start of the season. Then they'd recovered before. They still haven't got great home form. But I think it's an opportunity for Newcastle, and they can really make a sort of statement over the course of that week if they can, because then they've got Leeds at home on New Year's Eve. If they can get two positive results from that, then they'll go to Arsenal and genuinely will actually you'll have to talk about them as that as a sort of title game at
that's
that stage.
The point, isn't
that,
it?
That's
it's kind of refusing to acknowledge it and let it be real. And then we're suddenly going to have to at some point.
It's, it's a beautiful thing that it's like looking at that Leicester game and thinking of that as an opportunity. And Leicester, as Chris says, Leicester had a terrible start to the season, but they're a team that that we're used to seeing in the top four, top six, that have won things, including the league. And we're looking at that as an opportunity to go and win. And the mindset of that is great. We're all, I mean, the negative people amongst us, and I say that whilst literally holding my hand up in the air, it's like, the break will have come at a bad time. We didn't need that. But at the same time, it has given everybody a chance to have a bit of a break and a rest, apart from the World Cup players. So fingers crossed that they're back at it and back at it. I'm just so excited. I didn't want the season to stop when it did, and I can't wait for it to start again. I'm
desperate for football to come back. Proper football. I know there's been football, but I'm dying for Newcastle United to come back. I can't wait to see them again.
I did a piece last week on The Athletic, and it was basically, it wasn't actually my idea, but it was about this thing of, like, I can't wait for the big match. So this was last week, and of course the big match, everyone's thinking World Cup final. But no, I was referring to the fourth round of the Carabao Cup,
which I know has already happened.
I know, that's not the point I'm making.
That penalty shootout, eh, Chris?
Oh, no, Newcastle. God,
again.
God, they were brilliant.
They twied them all.
Terrible average, weren't they? But the point was, I said within the World Cup, it's like, there's been some good matches and there's been some shocks and stuff like that. But the point is, we won't remember any of that because it's like, it's surrounded by all these other fixtures. And then, of course, the best game that's ever been seen on the planet with the best player in the world playing against the second best player in the world. So that's kind of ruined my theory a little bit. Made me look a bit like an idiot, but there you go. I'm used to that.
I mean, it's going to be a difficult game, Chris. You have to be honest. The Leicester game will be a difficult game. Leicester are, like you said, they're on the up. The form has improved. But both teams have had this big break. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how teams deal with this break when they come back. We've never had this before in the middle of a season. We don't have a winter break. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, there was the break during COVID and stuff like that. But how are teams going to deal with this? And how is it going to affect form and fitness and all that sort of stuff? We just don't know.
And it was interesting to see Kieran Trippier and Nick Pope come straight back in the team on Saturday for the friendly. I think they will be straight back in the team for the Premier League match at Leicester. I'm not sure that'll necessarily be the case about some of the others. John Joe Shelvey's been playing a lot over the course of the last few weeks. I think he may play number six as Bruno Guimaraes comes back. And I think it's an interesting period for Bruno now because he's had the disappointment of having gone to the World Cup and not featured quite how much he wanted to. I think he got quite a lot of negative press in Brazil as well after coming on and not taking his chances in that match. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how each of those players deal with the sort of negativity that came around it. Obviously, Fabian Schär, as we said, was ill. But I do sense that Newcastle feel they've done everything they possibly can to have got this right. It's untested. It's untried because they've not had this sort of enforced break before, but they've tried to plan for that eventuality of trying to get the players back up to the optimum level. And I think they've got a very good opportunity against a very decent Leicester side, albeit want to start the season very poorly.
Also, it's given coaches a break and managers a break. And so how have they used that time?
Yeah.
And so, we've seen Newcastle change styles, change the way they play this season, been very, very aggressive, been, front-footed on the ball, but very aggressive off the ball. Has this given other teams a chance to have a look at the way Newcastle are playing and to really analyse it? They do all that stuff, of course, over the course of the season, but not with a break like this to really take stock. Does that mean other teams do shape up differently against Newcastle? Equally, has Eddie Howe used this time to have a look, and almost anticipating that and done a few tactical tweaks of his own? I mean, I think that's the sort of fascinating thing. Does it interrupt momentum? Well, obviously, and to a certain degree it does, but do teams come back fresher? Do Newcastle actually come back fresher and stronger for the break, or does it interrupt? Yeah. And so that's the fascinating thing. This is absolutely unprecedented.
Yeah.
What we've seen in the last month.
I mean, Howe is such a geek, and I mean this in the most positive sense. when he was asked about he was asked about the World Cup final and whether he switches off from is that a couple of hours where he can switch off from folks? He said, "Oh no, well I had my laptop on. I was watching clips at the same time as the World Cup final was on."
The greatest show on earth, Bournemouth reserves.
Yeah,
absolutely. like we say, we've not had to deal with this before, but there could almost be a danger of second-guessing yourself where this is concerned, because you want to improve when you come back, but at the same time, we've been doing so bloody well, there isn't an awful lot to improve, is there? So you just have to hope that it's coming, been a good break for us. But we all said as well, before the break, we all said, even if the season plays out, the way it plays out, and we finish in sixth or seventh, it'll have been still been an amazing season. I'm getting the feeling that some fans and maybe would think that's not the case anymore.
Well, it's,
and if we don't finish in the top four, five, we'll have failed.
I, the interesting thing about that is how the season plays out. I was talking to Alex Hurst from True Faith, our mate, about this the other day, and it was like, it's quite interesting. He was talking to somebody from Arsenal about this very thing. Of course, they're top of the league, and not expected to have been there. If they fall out, is it a disappointment? And it's like, it's part of those things. It's how it happens. If you're in the top three, top four, yeah, until the last 2 weeks of the season, and then you drop out, then of course that's going to be like a crushing sort of disappointment. I love the atmosphere around the club at the moment here, where it's that sort of, it is that sense of pleasant surprise, but also that just intensity around it. It's like, bring on the next week, bring on the next week.
It's a shame that that's not going to last though, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I'd love that feeling to last forever. It can't.
It can't because you look at, you talking about Arsenal, you go back to those seasons when they finished season after season after season in the top four and it wasn't good enough, under Arsene Wenger. And, outside of teams in the top half of the Premier League, they were looked at as if it's like this, you're so ungrateful, you're finishing at the top, you've got the Champions League every season, and yeah, it's not good enough. What's your problem? But it was this gilded cage that they were in, that they were used to winning things, and they were used to finishing first. And so if you're used to finishing first, and then you're finishing fourth, it's a disappointment. It's like when Newcastle finished fifth under Bobby, and he was really disappointed about the way that season ended and the lack of positive response from fans. Newcastle at that stage were used to competing in the Champions League. Yeah. To then not be appearing in the Champions League. So it's all about that context. The context around the club over the last 18 months has been so positive, so intense, so brilliant, so fresh, so exciting. That's the bit you want to grip onto for as long as possible and not be disappointed about finishing second or third or fourth, as you say. I mean, or even fifth, sixth this season. I mean, at this point, I think we are all almost anticipating Europe, aren't we?
But it almost feels like a free hit to me.
It should be.
And if they fall short, then everyone can just say, well,
we know.
Look at where we are compared to where we were.
To go back to what I said before, having that certain knowledge that the team and squad will be better, it doesn't mean you can't have a bad season or a difficult season for whatever reason. But knowing that the club's going to be stronger and richer and healthier in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, is a brilliant, brilliant feeling. But yeah, on the trajectory that the club have set for themselves, at some point they'll finish second, and we'll all think that's the end of the world. I mean, it's nonsense to think that way, but it just has to happen at some point.
I feel really lucky at the minute. And I think Newcastle should feel lucky in the situation that they're in because of what we've been saying about the fact that we didn't expect to be here. We didn't expect it to happen this quickly. We've got to try and enjoy this while it's here. It's an incredible moment, Chris.
It is, and I think that there's the perfect manager for the situation they're in, and I mean that both in terms of...
Because he's not going to get excited,
exactly,
is he?
So I mean it in terms of both of what he is actually able to do as a coach and as a manager in that sense, but also because of that. He's very good at towing the line between getting ahead of himself, not always being level-headed and calm, but not really detracting from fans being able to dream. He says, I want supporters to dream.
Yeah.
And that is what football essentially
doesn't
is
say that in answer to your questions, though, does he, Chris?
No. I mean, he shuts down.
No, Chris. Yeah. No, Chris.
Yeah. When other journalists ask questions. I think that he has done that very, very well so far in that he just says that he gives a very, very good response in terms of when he's asked about it. He doesn't get massively carried away, but he also doesn't completely shut it down in the sense that, we're not targeting winning cups. That's what we'd like to try and do, and that's what fans should be dreaming about.
But to go back to that point about, you know, if Newcastle finish fifth and sixth, and you know, let's not make that a disappointment this season. I totally agree with that. At the same time, I think we've got that lovely feeling at the minute where we can get carried away again. I mean, you know, and I don't mean that in a sort of, yeah, we're going to win the league this season, but that feeling of sort of weightlessness with the club, that sense that it's the club's going up and up and there's no ceiling to what might happen in the next kind of 3 or 4 years, that does go directly back to the Keegan era where he comes in, saves the club, they go up the next season and says, we're coming after you, so Alex Ferguson. Yeah. That's the bit that Newcastle are in now, where they've been saved in absolutely ridiculous, remarkable, brilliant fashion. Mm. They've got a manager that everyone believes in. They've got an ownership who are incredibly ambitious. And we're just at that point now where we're all saying anything's possible. And it's this bit that is just the good, exciting, weightless bit. And I agree with you. I don't want this bit to end, actually. I don't want this bit to stop.
Definitely not. But this podcast is going to have to end soon, Chris.
I need to give you presents first.
Oh, you got presents for us?
I have.
Oh, that's
well, I mean, are they as funny as Ollie's?
Well, probably not. But the issue is that so Ollie, our producer, had asked if we were going to do Secret Santa a couple of weeks ago. And George had replied saying that
absolutely
we weren't going
not.
To do that. Yeah, absolutely not. And then I forgot response. About this until this morning. I happened to be on Shields Road and Baker, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to end up getting some shit presents, so I may as well get shit presents that are going to go towards charity. So I went to the charity shop on Shields Road and Baker. Can't remember which one it was.
God, this is going to be such a bad ending to the podcast.
It is going to be a terrible ending to the show, George, but you just have to get over that. So I've got a DVD for each of you.
Okay.
So I'll start with Ollie. So this sort of sums up the podcast in general. That's a series of unfortunate events for you there.
It's not bad, Chris.
Then,
it's not bad.
Then, good start, Chris.
And then Taylor, you've already previewed your own one, which is Anchorman from
lovely stuff.
You are Ron Burgundy.
The W.
Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Yeah. The W, of course, is silent.
And for George, I have The Grinch.
Thank you. Perfect. Oops. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Lovely stuff.
It's not like you to be funny, Chris, but that's a nice change. Thank you. Well done. Excellent. Do we all still have DVD players?
No, I got rid of mine a long time ago when streaming came around. So that'll make a nice coaster, Chris.
I had looked at some VHSs, but they didn't have the right ones. I did actually want to get Ollie a series of Taggart, but I couldn't actually find it anywhere.
We should have got Chris a nice bottle of Cockburn's Port, shouldn't we?
That is good.
That is good.
That was good, yeah. If only...
If I'd known about that before I got
If only I'd known about it. I mean, if only I could have remembered anything.
Anyway.
Well, thank you very much. Merry Christmas.
Thanks a lot. It's been fun anyway. It's been lovely to see you. We only get to do this in person every so often, don't we? Usually at Christmas.
Well, usually at Christmas, immediately followed by COVID last year. So that was disastrous. Yeah. So look forward to that again.
Yeah, absolutely. So you lot out there as well, remember to head to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod, where you can sign up to The Athletic and pay less than £2 a month for the whole year.
Steak, cocktails, Bruno shirts.
Absolutely. So thanks a lot, George.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for your time. It's
Merry
been great
Christmas.
Fun. Thanks a lot, Chris. Thank you for dressing up as well.
You're welcome.
We took the piss.
I mean, I'm disappointed with the lack of effort from you guys, but Merry Christmas nonetheless. Hope everyone has a wonderful time.
Absolutely. And thank you, Ollie, as well, for putting up with our shit for another year. And thanks to all of you out there as well for listening. As always, it's an absolute pleasure. I can't talk. What is wrong with me? What is in that beer?
It's the Tyneside Blonde.
Tyneside Blonde talking.
Yeah.
As always, it's an absolute pleasure to bring you Pod on the Tyne. Thanks a lot to all of you for listening this year. And have a lovely Christmas. We'll be back after the Leicester game next week, and we shall talk to you a bit more then. Take care. Have a lovely Christmas, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Just a huge Merry Christmas to everybody. Have a wonderful time with your families. A special New Year. And let's look forward to 2023. Success and a continued partnership with everybody, with the community, with the fans, with our players, with our team, with everybody. So Merry Christmas, everybody. Lots of love from Merdad.
Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
The Athletic.